Hello, folks. Welcome to another episode of Django Chat. We're back after a long summer break. Now, don't get excited. This isn't a real episode. This is just me and Will warming up for the season. So, Will, how are you?
Hi, Carlton. I'm good. I'm happy to be back. Yeah, this will be, we're going to update everyone on various things in the Django world and that we've been up to. And in the next episode, which will be in 2 weeks, next week, right before DjangoCon, we have the two Django fellows, Sarah Boyce and Natalia Bedart. So stay tuned for that. But this is just a special get back into it episode and update everyone because we have been off for the summer. So DjangoCon, we're both giving talks.
Yeah, we are. That's quite exciting.
DjangoCon US, which is happening in Durham in a couple weeks. Tell us about your talk.
Well,
you gave a version of it at DjangoCon Europe.
So it's the same talk I gave at DjangoCon Europe, but it's compressed slightly because the time slots at DjangoCon US are just much tighter. And I got done with this a couple of years ago and I would just, I'll just give my same talk that went nicely at DjangoCon Europe. And then I was like, oh no, Kenny McLaughlin's holding up the 10
minutes
left. I'm like, what? I've got more than 10 minutes left. So I've got to.
Yeah, you were like 2x speed on it, I remember. Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's,
so
I wonder what's happening.
I do have to tighten my talk, you know, a little bit. I have to drop various bits or just, you know, skip past them quickly in the, when I do it in Durham. But yeah, so it's this idea about API maybe. Do you need an API? So I've started building my new application paths, which is what I'm working on, you know, since stepping down as a fellow. And we've been using Django and HTMX and Django template partials and, you know, Alpine.js. And a year and a half in, we've got a rich application. It's kind of coming to maturity now, and we've hardly got an API endpoint in sight. There are one or two just there, but it's a whole world different than before I started the fellow, where I was working on REST framework, and in those days it was API first or API only, right?
Right, that's how you started with Django, right?
Yeah.
It was via DRM.
Yeah. So, and it's just a matter, and the talk is essentially about that change between the world of 2018, say, when I started following, where it was API first, to the world of 2023, 24, where it's API maybe. And that's the idea.
I mean, if you need a dedicated native app, you still need an API. But if you just want a rich web experience, well, not necessarily, but in general.
You'd still going to build the API endpoints for a Swift integration or a Kotlin integration for Android, definitely.
Right. And you've been, I mean, before starting on Paths, your own deployment, you did a bunch of work with Swift.
This is a very recent switch
for
you. Yeah,
I mean, this is not like you've been doing this for a long time. You were API first recently.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still building that. I'm still using Button myself. Because my son was ill last year, I missed my window to get it shipped. And so it's a bit like, okay, when do I now find a chunk of time to take that from works on my machine to productized, which is, you know, that big step. But
that has a big Swift component.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm building, you know, I use Mac. It's Swift UI is the Mac development environment that you use these days. And it's lovely and it's nice. And yeah, so, and that was only 6 months, a year before embarking on Paths, but it came to be the case that it's like, okay, we need to get this shipped in very tight time schedules. What's the most realistic way to do that? And the HTMX Alpine HTML first approach was literally the only way that, with the budget and the time constraints we had, that it could be done. Because it's only me on the development side. And so it's not like it was always like, you know, you'd have a back-end developers, you'd have a front-end team, and you'd sort of...
Yeah, but you're Carlton.
Yeah, but we didn't have the budget for that multi-team, multidisciplinary thing. And yet, you know, we're producing an app which is, it's quite rich, it's quite nice. And, you know, we get the clients go, oh, that's good. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's... And it's like, okay, yeah, that's all doable without this need for these much more elaborate tool sets, which is fantastic, I think.
And that's one of the biggest questions I get with my Django for APIs book is people saying, should I do this for my solo project? And I almost always say, if it's just you, no. Like, you can build to that, but just start with HTMX at this point.
Yeah.
There's no need to go native unless you have to and unless you have an existing team.
Or unless it's if you can already build a UI in whatever framework, if you're already an Android expert, or if you're already an iOS expert, or you're already a React expert, then why not build the back end that just ties into that? But if you're having to learn two tool sets at the same time, no, just not.
We're all full stack.
Yeah, well, right. There's this idea that full stack, the native app was this glowing, castle, this Disney-like castle, you know, the princess castle. And then the full stack is like a sort of shed held together by, you know, dark <Duck.
laughs> Yeah. I mean, it is interesting to try to take a step back, I don't know, 5-10 years. It used to be that you just couldn't build anything interactive that was any good without going API first, right? I mean, it's sort of, I don't know if it's snuck up on people, but I mean, HTMX, you know, we've had Carson on the show. I mean, that technology has been around for a while. So I don't know if it's confluence of Alpine.js or just general frustration with what kind of React and Android are doing. They're becoming, you know, they're almost trying to become full stack frameworks themselves, where there's this, you know, the pendulum has definitely swung back.
Okay, so I think on the technical point of view, from the technical side, the web native DOM got good in the intervening period. So there was this golden age where you just sprinkle on some jQuery and you could build anything you wanted. And it was just like, you know, building my website, sprinkle on some a few lines of jQuery and, you know.
Copy and paste it from Stack Overflow.
And, you know, plugins galore. It was glorious. And then it just got ever more complex because ever more things wanted to happen. And native DOM manipulations were terribly slow. And
that's the point of React,
right?
And the
virtual DOM and the diffing of the DOM, it was all about that.
Exactly.
But it turns out that the browsers got faster, and DOM manipulations are quicker now than virtual DOM manipulation. So might as well just do it natively in the browser. The browsers caught up, and they in fact got in front of the virtual DOM diffing technique, and so.
I hope that's in your talk.
No, I haven't got time for that in my talk.
All right, well, won't give away too much.
You know, I can't, and I'm not going to apply. But DjangoCon US does have these 45-minute time slots, but I couldn't apply for one of those. I couldn't do a 45-minute talk. That's crazy.
Yeah, I think I did one 2 years ago, a 45-minute one. I've done a couple of 45-minute ones. I think those days are behind me. I'm also, I think we're back-to-back on Wednesday. We're both doing 25
Yeah, there's a Django slot. Chat hour. Near the end on Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah, so kudos to those of you who do, and maybe sometime again, but it's sort of like a marathon versus a half marathon. It's not twice the effort to do twice the amount of time. It's at least four times as much effort because, you know, 25 minutes, I don't know, you sort of introduce it, talk about it, the time's done, but 40, 45 minutes, you're up there for a while.
Yeah, there's plenty of time to show what you don't know in 45 minutes. are you talking about if you're only doing 20 minutes?
So I'm doing a talk that I gave at Django Boston back in February. I think Django Boston has started up again, and they asked me if I would do an inaugural or re-inaugural talk. So I said, okay. So this is on Django user model, which also I feel like has had a lot of movement and momentum just in the the zeitgeist. So Django's user model, past, present, and future is the discussion. And I realized that until I did this talk, I didn't really know the full history of user because I came to Django in 2012. And actually 2012 was about the time there's a whole wiki that Russell Keith McGee put together about all these decisions around, we should do something about the user model from back when Django first started. And so the talk talks about how we got to where we are now, where we can all agree username is a little bit outdated. Maybe we want email. We have Django all auth. We know, so I'll go through what I think are the current patterns, user profile, and then I can talk about the future, which is kind of exciting. You just published this magnum opus on Stack Report all about your thoughts on user model. And definitely I've been influenced by you over time. So it's all about user model, kind of how it's developed, where we are now, and give some context for discussions that are happening now around we really probably should do something about simplifying it. And it basically comes down to custom user models were introduced to solve a problem, but it means that now authentication and authorization, if you will, or permissions are conflated. And that has a performance tax, it has a complexity tax. And it's just ick when I'm teaching people that I have to say, here's the user model. And then I have to go, oh, wait a second, you need this custom user model. What's that? Oh, and then there's also a custom user or a user profile model. It's a bit of a mess. Most web frameworks just give you auth and off you go. And so I think it's a little bit of Django being, it's so customizable, which is why we stay with it and love it, but it is off-putting to beginners. So anyways, and you've made some moves around in core. Maybe we can actually do something here around updating user, which I know is one of the blasphemies.
Well, it goes against the stock advice. The stock advice is you should have a custom user model, and you know, and that's just what the docs say. And I don't agree with it. I've never really agreed. I've never used a custom user model. I've never felt the need for it. And at the beginning, it was all about, for me, it was all about logging by email. But there are ways around that. And I think the discussion back in the day went largely, it's not feasible to migrate the user model. And so we need some other solution, and custom user models are the option. Now, I think we gave up too early on that. And by doing that, we created this kind of world of complexity this world of complexity, particularly for new users, where they come in and they're going along, and either the...
Because established ones, you have your pattern, you just do it how you do it. But a new person's like, what do I do? And it's like, well...
Yeah, and the thing that we see all the time is people start off, and they start with auth.user, and then they find these warnings when they've leveled up a bit, but they're already like several months into their project, and they're like, oh, have I got to restart from scratch? And it's just, no, you're totally fine. Don't worry. The projects using auth.user are legion, and nothing bad happens to them, right? But I think I put out a project early in the year called Django Unique User Email, which just shows how you can do a kind of bolt-on migration to the user model. And all of a sudden you've got unique emails, and then you can do login by email. And I want to do one about the profile fields, like the first name and last name fields, which are a bit icky, and we should try and we can just sort of kind of get rid of those as well. And you know, if people wanted to,
while we've opened it up,
people then give people the option to toggle on or off username or email, you know, because you don't necessarily need login by both. I like login by both, but some people just want email only, and all auth has to do this kind of trick where it populates the username field behind the scenes with a unique identifier, which is fine, but if that field just kind of could disappear, that would be even better. But then the idea would be to pull those credentials off of the user model and allow them to say, well, what about GitHub login? And what about Microsoft, you know, my Microsoft org login for my work? And what about, Sesame login, where I get a unique login code, and have different credentials, more different ways, tying in with things like the Touch ID on your computer or the Face ID on your phone or all these things which nobody even imagined back when Django was born.
Right. And then, there, you know, the fact that two-factor auth is a third-party package, which I think people like, but again, that feels like something that should be
2024, back to auth in Django. Like with batteries included, right? And that's pretty batteries.
Right, right, right. Less magic, more batteries. Well, so anyway, the talk will be about that. Your post is already out there. That's great, because that gives me something to point to for the future, and I sort of go into the history and the present a bit more.
And nothing's going to change quickly here, right? This isn't like, oh, we're going to suddenly... Because we've got to do it in a backwards compatible way. We've got to get consensus.
But I think this is important context for people to know who are new or intermediate to Django. Because in practice, I mean, there's a lot of people I know who use custom user models, load it up, and they're fine with it, you know? So that's... But it's one of these things that when I gave the talk, the one 2 years ago, which was sort of this... In a way, my magnum opus of like, here's all of Django. I tried to point out, you know, cover every area, be like, this is one where there's differences of opinion. And the differences, you know, sometimes it matters and sometimes it doesn't. This is one where, you know, you just need to pick one and stick with it. But unfortunately, we have a good half dozen areas around where someone who's new has to just pick something. Yeah. And it can be confusing, because this one, you know, you can do it both ways right now, and it's fine. But there are some other decisions you can make that will... hurt you in the long term. That
you want to get those right.
Choose your own adventure. Yeah. Anyway, so I'm looking forward to that, and we're going to be back to back, I believe, on Wednesday of DjangoCon in the afternoon.
Yeah. So speaking of giving people, you know, who have got to choose their own adventure, the advice they need, you've got the book's got an update, right? You've got the fifth edition.
Yes. Fine. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Fifth edition of the Django for Beginners book. So it's 5.0 plus compatible. Has a real cover. I updated I added a whole nother project. So I dove more into template context, which I felt like was kind of missing. There's a lot more on function-based views. So I show both function-based. I actually start with function-based views, add in class-based views. We do some projects with both. And then I go purely class-based views for the last one. But I really wanted to get across function-based views because people see that. It's important to understand. I think it's a little easier to teach with it, understand how the request object and the context work together. So it's expanded, it's updated. I'm happy with it. I'm gonna need to update the APIs and professionals books. But anyways, that's out. And the main thing I've been working on is this learnjango.com, where I'm going to have all my stuff online. You can get free premium versions. You can sign up for an account right now, actually, if you want. It doesn't do anything per se, but you're in the system. But
reserve
I will
a username.
I reserve a username. I can't put a date on it, but certainly by this fall, it will be out with the courses on there. And then I have updates. I have an e-commerce course that I've been building alongside building my own, building this out. So that's one that will come out. Oh God, I hope it comes out by the end of the year, but it has basic payments, how to do subscriptions, how to build a shopping cart with sessions, how to build a store with a database. So in the way I like to do it progressively, four different projects, but I've learned a lot just building that because it's doing payments is, you know, it's sort of not complicated, but it's also really icky how people do it. And a lot of times there's a lot of JavaScript, which could just be done in a Django form. And so anyways, this is kind of the course I needed to feel comfortable building this out and doing it right, in quotes. Yeah. And I think it will help a lot of people because there are e-commerce courses out there, but to me, they're 10 hours long and they go way in the weeds. And there's a lot of personal customization that doesn't need to be there. So this will be something that covers, you know, builds you up and shows you, look, it's just have the product, do the payment, do the webhook, you know, goes into webhooks. And I'm happy with how the webhooks portion is. It's not crazy confusing to me anymore, but I think webhooks sounds very scary at first to people.
It is.
So anyway,
you're too shy to say this, but I'm going to say it. Like when you say you're happy with it, that means it's going to be like your absolute usual standard of great canonical reference to, right, go back to time and again, yes, this is just how I do it, right? It's going to be exactly that.
That's the bar, yeah.
Right, good,
yeah.
good.
So, I mean, if I can understand it, then anyone can. So I have that. Plans for other things. I'm still doing the newsletter, Django News newsletter with Jeff.
Yep.
That's been going
out every week.
Five,
keep
6 years.
Saluting you there.
Yep, that's the number one Django newsletter, the only one, but the number one. And you can sponsor that if you want. We have some sponsors, but spots.
Are we going to have sponsors on the podcast as well?
Well, we are. You know, maybe people notice we had a sponsor in the spring, Mailtrap, and then we have some sponsors coming up for the fall, and also ways on the website people can reach out. So yeah, trying to cover costs a little bit. And so if it's something Django specific, you want to reach developers or companies.
It's quite a targeted audience, right? So, I mean, if
it's very targeted,
So this is a good opportunity for someone looking to reach the Django, you know, user base.
Yeah. Yes, so that's an option. It's on the website. What else? Oh, yeah. And then I guess the last things for me, and then we'll let you talk about your stuff. Also, I've updated. So I have this awesome Django repo that I do with Jeff Triplett that's still maintaining, still curating. Still growing. And then Django X repo, which is a starter project, a basic starter project. I've updated that to 5.1. Yeah, just did that. So that sort of gets you started. And we've talked about, you know, there is a pipe dream of everyone thinks their own starter project is like worthy of everyone else to use, but doing so requires a lot of steps. And, you know, the ones that are out there like Corey's SaaS Pegasus are an immense amount of work. So we shall see if anything more comes of that. Because a lot of times, and I say that because people ask for more advanced things on Django X, and I have my own version of, you know, what I use. But to take that and then have the docs and everything else required to make it user accessible is like a book worth of work. So
I my I understand people working in an agency, right, who need to turn out projects regularly. So they need a core, you know, they need a project that they just, this is our rubber stamp. Here's the beginning project. They're all the same. We know exactly what, I understand all of that. What I find with startup projects in general, not saying yours or picking on anyone in particular, but they just end up getting more and more and more things in them. So that when you create the startup project, there's so many files, so much to see, so much to do that you can't really navigate it.
It's the understanding piece. And I get that, I mean, in every framework, there's some version of a SaaS starter where someone says, I need to, you know, I have something I want to charge for, and I'll kind of backfill the understanding a little bit. I definitely understand that. I guess I've always, because I take a teaching first perspective, you know, I did Django X, God, 6-7 years ago, because Django Cookie Cutter, which is fantastic, to me was overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I only now mostly can wrap my head around it, and yet rote beginners use it. But you know, that's fine. They just want to get started and they'll kind of learn that stuff later. But yeah, anyway, so Django X is kind of where I'm at, and people who want more advanced things, I usually just say, you know, you can fork it and go for it. It's deliberately very minimal, but gets you up and going.
Yeah, like it, just what you need and no more, right? Rather than everything you could possibly have, which sometimes is a temptation.
Right. Until we have that master toggle in Django where you go from local to production. Oh, right? Yeah, that's one of the other
mythical thing where you'll be able to do that. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but yeah, who knows? Okay.
All right. So Carlton, let's start with Stack Report. Okay. So this is this new newsletter you've been doing for a while.
Yeah. So I'm about 5 months in, something like that. So I decided to just try something slightly different. And so what it is a monthly email. It's long form, so it's like, you know, it's a bit of an effort to write and it's a bit of an effort to read, but it's, you know, it's slightly deeper than just the shorter blog post type content. So it's a long form essay on, you know, everything to do with software development or Django or whatever, done estimating, locality behavior, growing your business logic in Django, the user model we did this month, in other ones, other topics will come. I've got ideas for what it means to be batteries included, where we take that for Django. I've got lots of ideas about what over engineering means. There's a kind of nice little, we always talk in Django about batteries, about using boring technology, right? This idea about boring technology and the known tech. And there's a counterpoint to that from some of the, you know, let's call them big brains in the community, who that they kind of think of it as a sort of anti-intellectualism almost. And so there's this really interesting trade-off between, you know, what we've on the show talked about using boring tech and the money stack and all these things that we like versus, well, hang on, but what is that sort of Ludditism? Is that holding back progress, and how you trade those two off? And I've got views, and I've obviously got take, because I'm constantly experimenting with new things. But do I wheel them into production first day? No, I don't. So, you know, maybe I'll do an essay on that.
This is a very distilled, you know, your decades of experience, time as a Django fellow, and your deep thoughts, but well laid out. And yeah, they're sort of essay, you know, and I suspect for you, I mean, Tom Christie has a number of essays he wrote back in the day that, you know, you refer to as Heat Death of the Universe. And this is, to me, this is kind of your version of that, right? This is sitting up and saying, okay, I have thoughts on these things, and let me present them in as nuanced a way I can. Anyways, invaluable. I mean, even for me, who, if I need to, I can ping Carlton. You know, this is him like distilling it, right? It's like him putting some thought into it and be like, okay, this is my thought on a user model.
I'm blushing now. But so it's more considered, it's deeper, and it's a premium thing. So that, like, I've asked people to pay either $5 a month or $50 a year. You can, you know, get two issues free. And I thought about that. Everyone was always like, I'll do GitHub sponsors. Like, and I kind of, yeah, okay, I like GitHub sponsors, but you don't really get anything for it. And there's no incentive for anyone to do it. So I'm like, okay, let's call it, it's exactly the same as GitHub sponsors, but you'll get, you know, my condensed thoughts. And there's two or three free issues. And I might make the odd one free if it's more wider usage, but most of the issues will be to premium subscribers only. And it's just a kind of way of saying, you know, if you like the work that I do on my open source on Django and the other open source projects in the Django community, if you want to help support, you know, me being on the podcast all the time, then, you know, take up a subscription to the Stack Report. And that's you know, your way of feeding back, and you'll get, you know, my considered opinions after all these years of software engineering. So that's going well. Not a billion signups by any measure, but, you know, people are signing up, and they're being very nice about it. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, and it's material, right? I mean, at a certain point, it just helps sometimes to be like, you know what, there is some money coming in when you're sitting there like, do I take that extra time on, you know, it sort of pushes out the burnout of open source. And then, of course, it's also a nice impetus to take the time to really condense your thoughts where, you know, I certainly have this. I probably over-index on just pumping out a free tutorial when it's like, well, but I really should be doing a paid thing, right? There's a balance there. So at least having something that's in the paid bucket is important for longevity.
And it's making a commitment to myself and making a commitment to my subscribers that I'll turn up each month and write that thing. So I've been literally meaning to write this thing about where to put your business logic in Django for 4 years or more, 4 or 5 years, however long it was. And I finally got down to doing it. And it's only because I said, right, okay, I'm going to make this commitment to write this longer piece once a month, at the end of the month, every month, and, you know, allow people to subscribe if they're interested in that. So that it's, I'm really enjoying it. People are being very complimentary. They're enjoying reading it. And so I'm happy. And that's good. And then beyond that, what have I been doing? I've been working on Neapolitan, which is my quick crud views for Django. Mm-hmm. They've been going very well. What can I say? They've utterly changed the way I write Django. It's not just Neapolitan. It's the combination of Neapolitan with HTMX, with Django Template Partials, which is the other package I've been working on. But I've hardly used a built-in class. Class-based view, one of the generic Django's built-in generic class-based views. I've hardly used those at all. I might use a simple template view. I might write a view subclass myself. But basically, beyond that, it's all Neapolitan. And it's just like, this is what I wanted. And the bottom line is, like, you write a list view because you want to list your bookmarks. Then you write a detail view. And then you write a create view. And then you write an update view. And then you write a delete view. And they all use the same get query set. They all use the same filtering to the current user. And you end up having to either put that into a mixin or reduplicate it across all the classes. Whereas with Neapolitan, you've got that get query set method in one place. And then as you grow, but maybe you think, I'll spin this little bit off into a separate view. Or I'll spin that off into a separate view. But it gives you, what I really like about it gives me this kind of workspace where I can just bash stuff out, and it can be horrible. It can be, you know, when you're first writing something, you've got no idea what it's going to look like. So just do it all in the view, and then you think, I can move that into the view, into the form, and that would tidy that up. Okay, I'll move that into a manager method. But that first pass, I know it's all contained within this namespace of the CRUD view, and it's like, brilliant. I'm going to keep it all in there until I see the patterns emerge, and that I've just found so powerful and so empowering and so enjoyable.
Well, maybe that's the next post after your logic one, is just to put some code on it and be like, you know, here we go.
I mean, it's always really embarrassing showing that first pass where it's literally,
I've been putting out code since I was pre-noob. I mean, it's just, I think it's okay.
No, yeah, I mean, I get that. And, you know, the business logic post, I gave a good example of where you start something in the view. And then you move it into the form, and then you move it into a manager method, and then, you know, maybe pull it off your managers because you need a service layer because you're that advanced. I mean, you know.
That's like the advanced version of my Django Hello World 5 ways. It's like logic 5, 6 ways, which yeah. I still need to figure out what to do with that post or make a video or, because if you can, you know, it's like if you can understand that around Hello World, then you really understand how views and templates and URLs work together in the same way that if you can move the logic around with some fluidity, it just opens up seeing Django as this defined thing that you can manipulate as opposed to this unknowable blob that it can definitely feel like for people.
And we spend a lot of time arguing about, like, you know, we have these debates about function-based versus class-based views and things. But the bottom line is that the actual underlying logic is, you know, mathematical, it's isomorphic. It's the same logic, right? It's the same it's the same transformations that you've done. And so the wrapping you put on it, whether it's wrapped in a function-based view or wrapped in a class-based view, that should fade away. That's irrelevant, right? But how to express that? I need more advanced mathematics.
It's like the human wrapping, right? Because, I mean, it's not even, obviously the computer doesn't care, but Django doesn't care. Like all these, so many of these constructs are just for us humans, you know? Like, why do we have apps? Like, just because it's a little easier to reason about. Like, yeah. Django doesn't care.
And that's why I'm excited.
Yeah, some people don't use apps, you know? There, I said it. Yeah. Some very senior people don't use apps.
Well, I've quite gone to this single folder model where you just have everything in one.
Well, there you had to one up it. You know.
Yeah, exactly this is that not, like, just start with a single folder, make that folder the app, the project folder the app, and then put your models.py there. And it's like, okay, that grows an awful long way. And then eventually you're like, oh, do you know what? I will have a separate app for the CMS, which is nothing to do at all with my business logic. And you have your Wagtail stuff in a separate app, which is then, if you want to, extractable directly to a separate project. And you can, you know, Wagtail's got tooling for exporting your stuff and from one database and importing it into another. And that's all good. But this is why I'm excited by the for your Django for Beginners, where you've brought in the function-based views. Because the web problem is about turning HTTP requests into HTTP responses. And if you can teach that to a beginner, then you can empower them with these more, you know, with the class-based views, which are more powerful, but they're more powerful by obscuring some of what's going on underneath. And if they've got that understanding and bring them with them, then they are a richer developer. And so you're giving them that.
Yeah, and I resisted this for a long time, but I think just the teaching component of it wins out. And so I try to strike that balance.
So anyway, the other thing I've been doing is template partials, which is this.
Yes, yes.
This is for use with HTMX, and it gives you these reusable named parts of your template. So say you've got a list of bookmarks and you want to just re-render an individual bookmark. Well, you can wrap the section, the section of that template in a partial, and then you can say, right, I just want to load that partial. And it's integrated with the template load, and it's been very well received. And it's again the combination of Neapolitan plus HTMX plus template partials, the three of them together is kind of it's just such a rich combination that I'm just having massive fun with it.
Now, is partials the one that might get into a future version?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to get it into Django. So I'm working on the pull request now. Hopefully I'll get it in before this autumn so we can get it in for 5.2, but if not, I'll definitely for 6.0. And it's just a template tag basically, but it's not just the template, it's the integration with the template loader, so that you just add like a text fragment, an identifier, fragment identifier on the end of a .html hashtag this header, which is the anchor, lets you go to the anchor. You just do that for the named partial to the template loader, and it fetches the template, and then it goes, is that partial defined? And if it is, it will give you just that partial back. And so your view logic just remains unchanged, and it's wonderful. And it's
simple views. Go ahead.
Well, what you don't want to do is have to rewrite your view logic just to change the template. Basically, you want to just set the template name on the self.template name equals this, and then the rest of it needs to be the same. And then a template view will return a template response, which is delayed rendering and other niceties about it. But if you end up changing your view logic, you end up changing the response type as well. And it's like, that's an awful lot of grief that you had to go into to just use a partial rather than the full template. So template partials addresses that.
So speaking of putting logic in projects, one thing, I updated my Django Allauth tutorial, if anyone wants to check that out, because a mistake everyone makes, and for some reason it's not in the Allauth docs, is you need sites set up. So time and time again, even I make that mistake of, you know, so sites is this, it's almost a historical thing at this point. I don't know how many people actually are running multiple websites off of Django project. Maybe the people will come out of the woodwork for that one. But there are these sites kind of crops up in sometimes interesting ways that you may not think of. And anyways, Allauth, that's one of the classic mistakes. If you're getting a funky error, I should probably just do a post on this is the error you're getting because you didn't add sites for Allauth. Yeah. Anyways, I'll do that. That's a common beginner thing. Even I wrote the OAuth tutorial years ago, and I was just trying to do it from scratch based on the docs. And I was like, God, what is that error? And then I was like, oh yeah, that's what that is. Anyways, that's what learning feels like. But I think the last thing is mentoring mentors, right? You have thoughts on this.
Yeah, so this autumn, I'm just doing an experiment. So I was thinking about the steering council elections that are coming up for, not now, but like after 5.2, so December, the end of the year kind of time, that's when the 5.2 development cycle will start. No, that's when it will finish. So 5.2 will be released. So April time, there's going to be an election for the steering council, Django steering council for 6.x, for the 6.x cycle, 6.0, 6.1, 6.2. And last time it didn't go well because we didn't advertise it very well. We just had a big board election where we had like 30 people stand, and that was too many, and everyone was a bit overwhelmed by the number of people, and so we didn't really advertise the steering council election. Then only 4 people stood, which wasn't enough, and it wasn't for 5 spots. And it's like, it's like, can we beforehand like try and get some excitement about this so we actually get a decent panel of people running? And it's not just, so there's one aspect is getting more people. The other aspect is trying to look at diversity. It's like trying not just have white men, because as much as we're all great and whatnot, it would be nice to if the steering council represented the Django community more widely. And then I was thinking about, okay, so what can we do about that, and what can we think about that, and how can we encourage people who aren't the usual demographic to stand? But then I was thinking through maintainers. It'd be nice. It is important. The steering council has a technical role, right? So it's important that at least 1 or 2 or 3 members of it are actively involved in the maintenance of Django, because they do have to speak on technical questions. Now, I don't think all 5 need to be, because it's good to have people like, you know, a commercial interest in Django. I rang a Django shop, or I'm part of a Django shop, and we find this. Or, I think people that are involved in the support side, so in the education side, so like, you know, like writing books or helping on the forum or helping on the Discord or, you know, seeing the problems that come up. That's an important role on the steering council as well. So it's not just technical, but there is this kind of technical requirement for at least 1 or 2 members, you know, say 2, I think kind of 2 at the minimum. But then put those 2 thoughts together about diversity and the technical requirement, and you look through the package ecosystem, and it's mostly men doing the maintainers. And we have more non-white men contributors through projects like Djanganauts. But what we're not seeing is that leading into, well, you know, actually, do you know what, of the jazz band packages, half of them are maintained by, you know, women, or half of the, that's just not the case. We're nowhere near that. And so that's a real failing. And so I thought, well, okay, maybe we could try and help prospective maintainers. So just for this next quarter coming up until the end of the year, I'm doing an experiment, and if it goes well, I'll carry on into the new year. I'm going to put Thursday afternoons aside and be online and do my own maintenance, but be available in case of, either to be a support group for other maintainers, but more in mind, if you're in the Django community and being a maintainer kind of appeals to you, well, maybe be able to give a bit of mentoring, a bit of advice on that. And most of it is, well, you know, maintaining is just contributing, but on an ongoing basis, right? It's but just to try and be available and try and see if having a kind of an office hour, a support group for maintainers, a bit of mentoring for prospective maintainers, see if we can move the needle, see if we can help some people make that jump from, well, I've contributed to Django or contributed to packages in the Django ecosystem to, oh, do you know what? I could take this package on. And as hopefully we could get some people on board. But the other side of it is that packages are massively under-maintained, right? So if you go through the jazz band packages, yes, they're still alive, but they're kind of on, you know, oh, every 8 months to do enough to get it updated to the next one. And not too many big bug fixes get merged, not too many things get done. Lots of projects are in kind of stasis. And that's okay, because they're very stable, they're mature, they do their thing, they don't necessarily need to grow. But if we were to find a way of smoothing the on-ramp for maintainers, I think we can make a big difference to the sort of viability of the ecosystem. With not very much change. I feel like I've been banging this drum for years, but...
So how will people find out about these sessions? Where should they look to be?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't quite decided. I only decided to do this over the last few days, and I'm going to start it's only the next week that or this week that I'll start. So
okay, we'll let people know in the podcast, the newsletter, we'll let them know. You'll put a post out.
But follow me on Fosterdon. I'll probably hang around, say, on the Django Discord in the packages channel, because that seems like a good place for it.
That's safe. Yeah.
On the forum. But it's going to... You know, I don't know. I don't expect a billion people to turn up. If a billion people do turn up, I've got no chance of helping that. But I'll try and be online. I'll try and be available to answer questions. And I'll try and do the odd post about, okay, so you want to be a maintainer. What does that mean? And just flesh out some content that I've had.
Yeah.
Like thinking about that.
We're going to have Tim Schilling on this fall. And he's been very involved with Jazz Band. And also he has this Django Commons where he's making moves around that, around the viability of maintenance. So we'll let him speak more on that. But it's a common problem. It's not a new problem out there.
Yeah, and my efforts at mentoring maintainers may well end up under the Django Commons umbrella. That would be an obvious and perhaps good place for it. I had this workshop that I ran at the Sprints several years to get started contributing to Django. I need that to become a freestanding thing. And that can't require me to be at the Sprints to deliver it. So I need to put that into something which isn't just, it's on a GitHub repo that I've got. But if that was part of the Django community, that somehow either Django Commons or Jazz Band or under the Django umbrella, it would be more like sustainable, more... Yeah, maintainable. Like, you can't just rely on me because, I'm here now and I'll be here for the foreseeable future. But it needs to be something that people can run themselves. And so, the bottom line is, well, it's an experiment. I don't know if I have the answers to how do we smooth the on-ramp for maintainers, because the bottom line is you asking people to give labor for free. And so the big issue there is, can you?
Right. As we've discussed, though, it comes with... If you're the maintainer of XYZ, it makes it a lot easier to get hired, to have, be taken seriously. I mean, there are these other benefits to it, but it is first and foremost, you're donating your time. And we do have these cohorts now. There's two cohorts, the third one starting up, of these Django-nauts who've been doing things such as, adding to core, but also contributing to the Django News newsletter, like covering that new in Django section. And so there is this growing group of people who I hope are looking for that next step of ways to contribute to Django. So might be an on-ramp into these other areas. But we can ask Sarah Boyce about that next week.
Yes. I mean, exactly that. It's what if I wanted to do more, what would I do? Well, okay, I'm in a position where I can answer that question. So we'll see. I don't know how it's going to go. But if you find me on Mastodon or you find me on the Discord or you can send me an email. I'm not hard to track down. I don't know exactly, but more or less I'll be online. Maybe I'll do a video call, log it to. I know some people have done a kind of working office hours type working group thing online.
Yeah, Jeff Triplett has that on Fridays, and that's worked out, I think, really well. There's a core group of people who show up, and it can vary in size, but it's more than just Jeff. So.
Yeah, and it's just to add a bit of camaraderie, if nothing else. Like, sometimes doing these things by yourself can feel lonely. And, there's no magic to it necessarily. But, if you feel like you're not alone, it can help.
All right. Anything else? Or have we...
I don't know. I mean, the kids went back to school today, finally. So I'm just like, oh, at last.
Yeah, last week for me. Yeah, that's a big transition, which this has been fun. This is a one-off. We're generally going to have guests and probably be a little bit tighter and more focused in our discussions, but this is what we've been up to. I'm excited to get, I'm excited for DjangoCon to see everyone. I'm excited to kind of get back into things. And with the kids off at school again with a regular schedule, it definitely makes my schedule easier and yours as well. So,
yep.
Look.
Well, anyway, we're basically, Django Chat's back. We're going to do it again.
Yes. And so the plan is every 2 weeks until probably the summer, take the summer off, but we have lots of guests lined up and I'm looking forward to it. It helps. It helps us with the community too, I know it helps people who listen, but just for us too, to talk to everyone and hear what they've been up to. And then sometimes you see a package or you see really good work someone's doing and it's like, well, who's that person, right? What's their story? So as ever, DjangoChat.com, all the usual places, and we'll see everyone next week. Bye-bye.
Join us next time. Bye-bye.